You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. I first want to say that our spring member drive is underway. You play a vital role in funding the programs you're passionate about. And whatever your reason for giving, in-depth political news, interesting conversations, the uplifting music, this spring member drive is your time to support the service you rely on. Make your gift at 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And thank you for your support. Right now, we're looking at the surge of coronavirus-related job losses. New projections out from the State Workforce Development Department show close to 725,000 Wisconsinites are out of work due to the pandemic. Jobless rate has skyrocketed to a projected nearly 27%. Are you newly unemployed or furloughed, and have you applied for benefits? Where are you at in the process? What questions do you have about your claim? We're at 800-642-1234. Amy Banicki is Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division in the Department of Workforce Development. Amy, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you, Kate. I appreciate taking the time.
And Caleb Frostman is here, Secretary of the Department of Workforce Development. Secretary Frostman, welcome back to you.
Thanks for having us, Kate. We appreciate it.
Well, Secretary, your agency recently announced that unemployment benefit claims have now climbed to almost 590,000 each week. What challenges are you facing with this type of volume?
Sure. And we continue to, of course, encourage folks to apply online. We can still process, I think, our peak day thus far has been 25,000 new claims in one day, and 98 to 99% can be done online. The challenges we continue to face are in our call center. So when, 2 weeks ago, we received just short of 3 million phone calls in our call center, and last week was, I think, closer to about 2 million. But for the folks that, continue to file claims, we really encourage them to do so online. But that's been our biggest constraint is the volume of phone calls. We've shuffled a lot of staff in that area, retrained some current DWD employees, brought back retirees. We're looking to hire a whole lot more folks to make sure we can handle that volume of calls. But that's been our biggest constraint as far as the massive, unprecedented call volume coming into our call centers.
Secretary, when you look to hire up and bring on dozens of new people, where might you be posting those jobs if someone is looking for a job?
Sure. WiskJobs.com is a great place to look. We'll likely update our social feeds with some of that. DWD.wisconsin.gov. We'll have good information on what these jobs entail, but we've seen really strong interest, and we're hopeful to get folks onboarded as soon as possible since we need additional assistance. We put out a recruitment for 36 claim specialists and saw over 800 applicants. And so we're hopeful to fill those jobs quickly, but hopefully we can get those folks trained up and into our call centers as soon as possible.
Amy, what is it like for you in trying to field those calls in the call center? What tips can you give people who are trying to get through?
The biggest tip I can give, Kate, is that they need to be patient. We know that they're desperate. We know that they need money. Our staff feel it. They're very stressed, but they want to help. That's why we get into this business, is to help people and do all that we can to get as many calls answered. But patience is the key, and keep trying.
So are there any type of day? What are the best times to call? How long should someone hang on?
Well, currently our wait times are running at about an hour, so they will have to stay on the line for quite some time if they want to get through, and that's why patience is so important. And when you do reach a claims specialist, please be brief and ask your questions, but remember that there's so many other people waiting to get on the line.
We're talking with Amy Banicki, Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division. Caleb Frostman is here, Secretary of the Department of Workforce Development. You and your questions, join in on claims 800-642-1234. Are you unemployed or furloughed and seeking benefits from the state? Have you filed a claim? Do you have questions about it? Join in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Secretary Frostman, given the challenges that your office is facing, Have you released some data, some numbers for those unemployed residents who have successfully completed the process and filed claims? What does your data look like there?
Sure. Well, again, we generally look at our initial data. So for the daily claims, as I've mentioned, you know, we peaked, I think, 2 weeks ago today at about 25,000 claims. But we keep track of those numbers daily, and we're seeing a pretty steep decline. We were at about averaging 20,000 claims a day 3 weeks ago. 2 weeks ago was closer to probably 17. Last week, we dipped below 10,000 for the last 3 days. But again, those numbers, again, are 98 to 99% of those folks can get their claims put through online. And so we're hopeful and optimistic that folks will continue to use dwd.wisconsin.gov/UI for their claims. But as Amy mentioned, the folks that do need to call in, we're asking folks to be patient as we continue to staff up the call center, make sure folks can get their questions answered.
Amy, I understand you extended the time to file a claim. What does that look like now?
Yes. If you can't get in to file your claim, do not worry. Once you do get in, you can go back to when the disaster was declared, when the emergency was declared March 12th. So we will backdate those claims without penalty and allow them to go through. So don't worry if you're not able to get in right now. As soon as you are able to get in, we will take those claims back to that date.
Amy, are you seeing jobless residents who don't meet the requirements for an unemployment benefit claim? And if so, what are some of the common reasons that someone does not qualify?
Yes, there could be several reasons. Some could be that they are independent contractors or gig workers, the self-employed. Those that are covered for unemployment are those that work for employers that actually pay in unemployment taxes. There's a lot of small businesses that don't do that. So with those folks, we do have a new program that came into effect when Congress passed the CARES Act, and that is Pandemic Unemployment Assistance, and that is specifically for those who are not otherwise qualified for unemployment benefits. And we will be starting to take applications for that program on the 21st, we're hoping. We're in the midst of doing the programming to get that ready for people to start signing up for it.
So gig workers, freelancers, independent contractors would be able to apply to this program that comes from the federal government stimulus package?
Correct.
And you're looking for an optimistic start date on bringing in those applications starting April 21st?
That is correct.
Let's take a call now. Doug is joining us from Milwaukee with a question. Hi, Doug.
Hi. I understand that everything's overloaded. But my wife and I are both self-employed, and I just heard now that there's going to be some special program for self-employed, but I've been calling for, I think, 3 weeks, all different types of day, and I never even get put on hold. It's just, nobody's available, and it beeps and hangs up, or it says leave a message, and it beeps and just hangs up on me. So I'm wondering if I'm calling the wrong number. It's 438. It's, I'm in Milwaukee, so it's 414-438-something.
Yeah. Doug, I want to get Amy to respond here very quickly. Amy?
Yes, Doug. We had some some call issues with our call center. We have gotten those fixed, we believe, so you could try again. But if you are self-employed, I encourage you not to call our call center, but rather wait and go online next week and file for that pandemic unemployment assistance. We will also get a lot of frequently asked questions out there this week on that program. So please go ahead and look at our website and then file next week rather than call.
We have Amy Banicki, Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division. We have Secretary Caleb Frostman here. And your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, it is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. For the week ending April 4th, the Labor Department said 6.6 million Americans applied for unemployment benefits. In Wisconsin, like everywhere else, unemployment claims have surged due to the economic fallout from the coronavirus. We're taking your questions about it with the Workforce Development Department. You can join in 800-642-1234. We have Workforce Development Secretary Caleb Frostman and Amy Banicki, Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division in the Department of Workforce Development, and they stay with us. Diane called from Silver Lake with a question. Diane couldn't stay with us. Diane volunteers for an organization that helps people. She heard people have to enter a code because they work inside Wisconsin but live outside the state. They're not getting through from calling. Is there any way to bypass the code and start the application without calling, Amy?
I do not know what Diane is referring to. We do not have a code.
So no code, even if you live out of state but work in Wisconsin, so if you cross the border in any way?
No, if you live out of state and work in Wisconsin, you should be able to file a claim like anybody else. Go online, excuse me, and file.
Lynn called from Racine, couldn't stay with us, filed for unemployment, wants to unfile for the unemployment claim. What is the procedure to stop a claim?
The procedure is to just stop filing. You do not have to contact us and let us know unless you do not want payment for some week. For example, you filed a weekly claim and you're expecting payment. You might want to let us know to stop that payment, but otherwise, just stop filing.
Secretary Frostman, part of the federal coronavirus relief stimulus package that was passed by Congress and signed by the president more than 2 weeks ago includes an extra $600 a week for people who are unemployed because of the pandemic. When can Wisconsin residents start seeing this money?
So as Amy talked about pandemic unemployment assistance, the timeline for the federal pandemic unemployment compensation, which is an extra $600, is really similar. We're building out the programming right now, hopefully testing it this week, and hope to have initial claims taken on the 21st with our first payments going out the 26th or 28th. So we are rapidly updating our system to be prepared for that next week. And that $600 can go to both folks that are eligible for state unemployment insurance, as well as the folks receiving pandemic unemployment assistance. So it's an extra $600 on top of state or what we would call PUA unemployment compensation.
Amy, is any of those dollars, the federal dollars, retroactive in any way?
Yes. The $600 actually goes back to, it'll start on March 29th. So anybody that filed in that week, we will go back and pay the $600.
So what happens to people who have been furloughed or are still employed, maybe still receiving health benefits from their employer and they are out of work? Amy, can they still receive unemployment benefits?
Absolutely. Yes, they should file. If they're working part-time or getting some part-time compensation, they should report that. They would be eligible potentially for a partial check from us and that extra $600.
And so that partial check would be to cover the time and the dollars that they're not receiving through their reduced hours. But in terms of that $600 on top of that, is that reduced in any way as part of that compensation package?
No, it is not. That's just a flat $600, no proration of it at all.
Secretary Frostman, Wisconsin, is not the only state here seeing gigantic numbers of newly unemployed people. How does our state compare with what others are seeing in the Midwest for the number of unemployed?
Sure. We are really similar and in terms of, the numbers, but then also our infrastructure. There have been a number of states that have completely shut their call centers down and have had online portal crashes, but we're very similar to our neighbors across the state when we hop on national calls with our counterparts through trade associations and the Department of Labor. Of course, other states are seeing unprecedented historic unemployment numbers that we've never seen before. And so, it's not much solace, but it sounds like we're in a similar company with our neighbors near and far.
So you've actually seen other states shut down their call centers?
Yes, even temporarily, and Amy could speak to this as well, but other folks have had even just temporary shutdowns as the call volume has been overwhelming and crashes have continued to occur.
Amy, how has Wisconsin dealt with any crashes and people just not being able to get through?
Well, our online system has done very well. We've only been down for maybe a half hour during this whole time period. But we are operating on an old system. Our online benefit system actually has been modernized, but our underlying core benefit system, like many states, was built back in the 70s. So it has some dated languages, and it's hard to find programmers for those programs.
Oh, COBOL is that.
COBOL,
yeah,
correct.
Uh-huh. Right.
Yep. Yeah, actually, New Jersey and some other states put out a call for COBOL programmers, and now IBM is training COBOL programmers because people just don't have that skill set anymore.
And is this an issue here in Wisconsin as well?
Yes, it's an issue here and with many other states. Most states don't have modernized systems because to do that, you need a lot of funds. And in good times, we don't get that funding. In bad times, we get a lot of funding, but that goes into our staff and then paying for IT just to maintain what we've got and then add these other programs.
We're talking with Amy Banicki, Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division. We have Caleb Frostman, Secretary of the Department of Workforce Development, taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Stacy now in Bayfield. Hi, Stacy. Oh, Stacy is not there. Stacy said, just left last October, started a new business. I had started filing for unemployment because it says online you can file, but worked in the past 18 months. Did I do the right thing? And so that was really piecemeal there. I'm not exactly certain, Amy, you can suss out anything.
Well, I think, based on what you just said, Kate, you did the right thing. File a claim. That's the most important thing. And keep on filing your weekly claims. Even if you're not getting paid, keep filing. Because eventually, if you're eligible, we will catch up those payments for you.
Secretary Frostman, Governor Evers, and the legislature, they're working on the new pandemic-related legislation relief bills. They agree on waiving the state's one-week waiting period for unemployment benefit eligibility. When do you expect that legislation to get passed? What are you hearing? And what other types of legislation or relief could impact unemployment claims?
Sure. So I'm hearing that the Assembly could be in tomorrow with a virtual session. I've not heard specifics about the Senate, but my guess is that they would be in hopefully shortly thereafter. And yes, there does seem to be bipartisan agreement on repealing the one-week waiting period, which is a relief for Wisconsin families to receive their first week of claim eligibility for state unemployment insurance, but also the federal program, the $600 a week, allows for the first week of payment, but only if the waiting week is repealed. So that would be potentially up to $970 for Wisconsin families for that first week, which is a big deal for a lot of folks. And then other changes that might come down the pike that could be beneficial for folks would be around perhaps the WorkShare program, which allows for employers to uniformly reduce hours across a work unit. Folks receive, of course, pro rata wages and then partial unemployment insurance, but then perhaps most importantly, stay attached to their benefits. And then, as Amy mentioned earlier, even with partial unemployment, even with WorkShare programming with partial wages, folks would still be eligible for that $600 a month. And so we're hopeful to see perhaps expanded eligibility for WorkShare in addition to the one-week waiting period.
Let's bring in Gary now in Green Bay with a question. Hi, Gary.
Hello.
Hi, Gary. Can you hear us? Can you turn down your radio?
Yeah.
Hey, Gary, can you hear us? Can you turn down your radio?
Okay.
Okay, Gary, go ahead.
Yeah, I was just confused a little bit with that $600 unemployment compensation. Do you get $600 no matter what you were making at your job before, now that you're laid off or lost your job?
Amy, go ahead.
Yes, Gary, that $600 is not dependent on what you were making when you were in your job. As long as you're laid off and as long as you're eligible for at least $1 in unemployment, you're going to get that $600.
Gary, does that answer your question?
And is that also continuous then? It's not just a one-time, it's every week then you would get the $600?
That's correct. It's every week up until the end of July.
Okay. Yeah, Gary, does that help?
Yes, thank you very much.
Thank you, Gary. Secretary Frostman, in the last few moments, are you looking at any system overhauls that you plan to make, either policy or back-end procedure, when you are on the other side of this epidemic?
Absolutely. So, you know, in the epidemic, we're currently kind of taking a three-prong approach. We're, of course, trying to increase staff. We've done a lot in terms of improving our telecom systems. We've added a trunk, which has, you know, prevented any crashes and has been helpful. And then are simultaneously looking at potentially enlisting the help of a third-party call center. But on the other side of this, as Amy mentioned, you know, there's been perhaps some deferred upkeep, but modernization. We would love very much to modernize our portals and our systems, our telecom in particular, but to get off of that 1970s-based system to make sure that, you know, we can be more flexible and adaptable as, you know, new programs are adopted. But absolutely, it's something that is top of mind for us, and we're hopeful to make those changes really soon.
Thank you both for joining us. Caleb Frostman, Secretary of the Department of Workforce Development. Amy Banicki, Deputy Administrator of the Unemployment Insurance Division. This is the Ideas Network. It is the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And first, let me say that WPR is a part of your day. It's your go-to source for essential news. And listeners like you are the biggest source of funding for WPR. We're in our spring member drive, and your gift right now supports the morning show and all the other WPR programs you rely on today and every single day. So join in with your gift right now at 888-202-2552 or go to WPR.org. And thank you so much for your support. Right now, U.S. Senators Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson are asking for a Postal Service investigation of the April 7th election. Wisconsin senators want more details about some voters never receiving their absentee ballots. At least three bins of unmailed ballots were found after the election. We don't know the results of the election yet. Other details, though, are coming out. Let's bring in Republican State Senator Andre Jacques of DePere to talk about the election and our state's broader response to the pandemic. He is a member of the Senate's Health Committee. And you can join in. What are your top priorities for lawmakers? What limits do you support on social gatherings or business operations? Where do you see the greatest need for state aid right now? Be part of this at 800-642-1234. Senator Jacques, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Great to be back on the show.
So election results are expected sometime after 4 o'clock today from last week's primary. How did the election go in the communities you represent?
You know, I would say that it went very smoothly. Got a lot of great reports throughout the entire district. And, you know, really throughout the entire state, I think things went relatively smoothly with the exception of Milwaukee and Green Bay. Of course, I only have one small ward of the city of Green Bay, and there are quite a few folks that were upset that the National Guard help was not accepted like it was elsewhere in the state. But outside of that, I think that our election workers did a fantastic job. I actually had a couple of my staff volunteer to help work the polls. One of them actually then subsequently was activated because he is in the National Guard, but the locations where they were working, everything went smoothly as well.
Well, WBAY talked to the last voter at Green Bay West High, 12:30 a.m. We've seen reports, others never receiving absentee ballots they requested. Do you support changes to how future elections will be run?
Well, certainly, I think we always have to look at the way that we are administering elections. Now, certainly, we've also seen difficulties with mail-in elections, or when Washington State first went to a mail-in election, they had any number of issues there as well. So I think that it's something that we have to be very careful about any changes that we make to make sure that we don't have some of the same problems that have been encountered elsewhere that we've already seen here in Wisconsin. But certainly I applaud the record number of absentee voters that we had, people that really helped to make sure that the lines were unclogged at the polling sites. And, it's something that we do make typically a pretty easy process for those that want to request a ballot. Unfortunately, the closer you get to the election in doing that, the more difficult it can be, particularly in some of the urban centers. And I just really want to thank the municipal clerks that I was in regular contact with. Just know that they were doing an outstanding job, doing the best that they could. But it does sound like there were certainly isolated circumstances in Oshkosh or in the Milwaukee area, perhaps the city of Green Bay as well, where some of those ballots were not able to be mailed or kept up with demand.
Matt from Wausau has just sent an email saying that we're the only state to hold in-person elections in the entire nation. And he wants to know, why would you consider it safe for Wisconsinites to vote in person a mere week ago, but tomorrow you're having a virtual assembly session out of fear of contracting the coronavirus?
Well, the assembly is meeting partially in person, but I think it's one of those things where, I was certainly very open to any number of changes early on in the process. I think that, when we asked those questions of the governor, he was adamant and repeated that the election was going to go forward with in-person balloting on April 7th. So that's one of the things that when I introduced legislation, I actually asked for a postponement of the annual town meetings that are held throughout the state of Wisconsin, as well as the boards of review, which both would require a congregation of folks in fairly significant numbers that would be in violation of the governor's order. Unfortunately, that statutory limit remains. We're likely to repeal that, at least for the emergency period here, later this week. But that was something that none of my assembly or Senate colleagues on either side of the aisle joined me in. So pleased to hear that that is likely to be in the COVID-19 response package that we're going to pass this week. But, I think certainly the election then gained enough public interest that there was a lot more focus on the fact that there was going to be an in-person election held. But, I think there are any number of things when you look at the election and the fact that the governor kind of did what was happening in Ohio, but then also differed from that in giving enough time for there to be a court challenge in which he knew it was likely to be reversed. Unlike Ohio, where they had been turned down by the court, but then ultimately closed the polling sites after it was going to be too late for there to be a challenge. So there's a whole lot going on with this. I think there is some political gamesmanship going on, particularly when you had a special session called where there was no bill actually introduced by the governor that could have even been voted on. So,
well, let's
I think that's unfortunate.
Let's take one call on this. Cole is joining us from Sun Prairie with a question. Hi, Cole.
Hi. I had a question for the representative. It didn't seem like you really answered your question about moving towards mail-in ballots. In fact, all he did was say that there were problems in Washington State without defining what those problems actually were. So if that's the holdup, and if he really thought that moving towards mail-in balloting was good, I'd like to hear what those problems are that he's worried about or that he thinks happen, and what they would do to resolve them so that we could have mail-in voting here.
Cole, thanks
sure,
for
Cole.
The question. Yeah, go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, so I think one of the things, first, when you're talking about mailing ballots to registered voters, but you also have a significant issue with hundreds of thousands of people that are currently on Wisconsin's registered voter list that the Elections Commission suspects are not, in fact, able to validly cast a ballot at the time, that's certainly some cleanup that would, I think, be essential to occur on the front end. I certainly, in talking with a lot of municipal clerks, they were adamantly opposed to going to a mail-in ballot from the standpoint that you would be then mailing ballots to people who didn't request them. And that certainly would open any number of other election security issues as well that they raised. The Wisconsin Elections Commission was not consulted by the governor when he proposed the various mail-in ballot programs, but I think we already have seen some of the issues with mail-in ballots in terms of multiple ballots being sent or ballots never being received. There's just a whole host of concerns that I think the Wisconsin Elections Commission had warned the governor about after the governor tried to take action without consulting them.
Cole, thank you for the call. Let's talk now about social distancing. Yesterday was Easter, but normal in-person services were prohibited under Governor Evers' stay-at-home order. Republicans urged the governor to ease restrictions on in-person Easter services. Did you agree with this position?
Well, you know, I think when you look at the virtual services that have been offered across so many different denominations, I think really what, now it was an Assembly Republican letter that was sent out, so I didn't see it before it went out, and I don't know that it's necessarily the same letter that I would have signed on to. But I think there was a very significant concern when you talk about the drive-up, like the parking lot services that had been happening in a number of places across the state that were being shut down, even though people were in their cars with the windows rolled up. There's absolutely, you know, compliance with social distancing, and yet there really was an accommodation. And luckily, we were able to get that clarified, get that fixed. I think really what we've been asking for throughout the process has been some sort of accommodation for the fact that, you know, you have religion specifically protected under our Constitution, and there are different ways that I think you look at the creativity of pastors and reaching members of their congregation, that, you know, certainly technology is a big part of that, and I think that there are opportunities for, you know, again, people to remain where there's a barrier in between them to be able to worship safely.
Last week, the state's largest business lobby called Governor Evers to release a plan for gradually restarting the economy on April 24th. Do you support easing the state's stay-at-home orders beginning in 11 days from now?
Well, I think what we've been asking to see from the governor are benchmarks, are things that would allow for there to be some reopening of the economy. I think the frustration from the business community has been that things might have been said by Governor Evers that are then contradicted less than 24 hours after. And that's, I think, you know, very, very difficult situation that so many of our small businesses, our employers are in across the state. You know, here in De Pere, we go a couple more months, and about 40% of our businesses in downtown said that they would be closing permanently. About 60% saw a revenue drop of more than 75%. So this is something that obviously is having a dramatic effect on our ability to recover. And when you look at the fact that there are some businesses that are allowed to operate and some that are shuttered that aren't necessarily of any higher risk, I think, you know, what we're looking for is some flexibility, some sort of a plan, really, for when things might be able to change so that businesses can plan. Having certainty for business is essential. Having certainty for just individuals and then everything from school to, you know, every life activity. I mean, I know there are a lot of folks that were concerned that not only were 40 state parks going to be closed, but that there was no prospect of them reopening under different circumstances, maybe being limited to pass holders or, you know, making some efforts to clean up on the vandalism front, something of that nature. So
let's pause right there with State Senator Andre Jacques of De Pere. We're here with him on the State Capitol Report. Your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the State Capitol Report. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We have State Senator Andre Jacques of De Pere on the line. He sits on the Senate Health Committee. Governor Evers has asked the legislature to approve hundreds of millions of dollars in state aid and changes to scores of state policies. Senate expected to meet virtually this week on a COVID-19 relief package, as is the Assembly. What are you seeking from state lawmakers as they consider relief proposals? Which workers need help right now? How would you prioritize state tax dollars? Join in at 800-642-1234. And State Senator Andre Jacques stays with us on the line. Let's bring in another call now. Logan is joining us from Green Bay this morning. Hi, Logan.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call, man. What I wanted to say is the entire GOP is quite consistent in trying to curtail the power of the governor. That's what they're doing. And they're not taking into account the safety of the American voter. It's just a power grab, and they have been quite consistent in this regard. Thank you.
Logan, thank you for the call. Logan, concerned about this being a power grab and about voter suppression. Senator Jacques?
Yeah, I don't know that was so much of a question, but more of an attack or a statement. But in this case, you know, what I've been working on pretty consistently from the point that I still had the opportunity to introduce bills this session, I introduced 8 different bills at the request of a number of different groups, from patients to local governments to be able to give flexibility. So, yeah, to the extent that there are a number of things that don't have a fiscal impact that Governor Evers has proposed, that the legislature is certainly on board with, or that I've proposed, that the governor has welcomed. You know, I also happen to chair the Small Business Regulatory Review Board. And, of course, within any number of these emergency orders, there have been suspensions or revisions of existing administrative rules. But things that I've introduced, actually, I am the author of the bipartisan 1-week suspension of the unemployment insurance that is going to be in the package that we're voting for this week, allowing for the rehire of those in critical occupations, including corrections and protective status, so law enforcement, EMS, but also things like allowing the court system to go virtual when there is agreement between the parties, or, you know, again, the changes with the annual town meeting or board of review so that they can postpone to what hopefully will be a safer date. Go ahead.
Yeah, let's look at this relief package for a moment, because, you know, the federal economic stimulus package was passed more than 2 weeks ago, March 27th. What is the holdup for state relief?
Well, I mean, I think certainly the legislature was making sure that it was going to be able to meet. There was the virtual session. I will say, though, that I've been very consistent in saying that I think the legislature should be in session more often. I certainly had bills that were ready to go March 26th that could have been passed then. So I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll continue to pass legislation that makes sense. Of course, there's still regular session bills that need to be disposed of. I know that legislative leadership was waiting to see the details in the federal legislation so that we could sync up what we needed to do at the state level, but certainly I've had any number of ideas ready to go. There's just a handful of my colleagues that have also introduced bills as well, but I know that there are a number that have been very supportive of some of these proposals. And so, you know, I don't know that there was really much of a clamor, again, until it became a little bit more of a political talking point, but from anybody on either side of the aisle to meet. But I have any number of bills that died in the assembly related to human trafficking, which I know I've talked about on this program before, or domestic violence, and certainly would have hoped that that's the sort of thing that could still be considered, just because a number of those issues happen to have particular salience to what we're going through right now as well.
State Senator, what do you want to accomplish this week with these sessions happening this week? What is the end result?
Well, I think hopefully we're going to be able to provide the flexibility that we need to, you know, help people through a difficult time, whether that's just understanding with suspension of deadlines or bills and costs, you know, some of the things that we need to do to comply with the CARES Act, things that are going to give assurance to people that are on the front lines or that are undergoing medical treatment right now, some of the credentialing reforms that hopefully can be looked at outside of an emergency situation as well. So I think that there's a lot that we can hopefully accomplish. I know it's a fairly expansive bill, but something that has a lot of, I think, very common sense measures that I expect will garner a great deal of bipartisan support. And, you know, hopefully that we'll be more prepared next time that a disaster hits, that there is an emergency situation.
We're talking in the State Capitol Report with State Senator Andre Jacques of DePere on the line, taking your questions about how the legislature is approaching this pandemic and where you see taxpayer dollars that you want to go. Join in 800-642-1234. Senator, Governor Evers' proposals to the legislature include allowing the health department to spend above its budget during emergencies. The governor says the agency needs more flexibility to adjust purchasing and staffing. Do you agree with this?
Well, I think one of the central issues where there's a dispute between the governor and the legislature is the ability to spend funds. And that's something that I know our legislative attorneys have backed us up on in terms of, and again, these are nonpartisan attorneys that I think have clearly made the case that the governor has fairly broad flexibility in terms of federal funds that are granted at the state level. In this case, the governor held off on making any number of purchases that he later was able to make in terms of vital supplies like PPE and ventilators. But as far as giving additional authority, and certainly there's different review processes with finance, but I actually kind of welcome the possibility that the legislature can have a greater say in how some of those funds are being spent. I think we just don't believe that we currently have that ability. So I think rather than just giving the broad authority, I think we might want a little bit more specifics in terms of how funds are going to be spent. I know that, even within the legislation that we're putting forward this week, there's going to be the ability to go to the Joint Finance Committee for early care development block grant funds. But that's something that even under regular times, we were kind of looking to the administration to provide more details as to how they're going to basically spend very substantial federal funding that already was granted to the state.
Let me jump in here and take a call. John joining us from Elgin, Illinois this morning. John, hi.
Good morning. Yeah, I have my nephew is a trauma one physician, and he's been on the front line of this whole problem that the whole world is facing, let's be honest. And they've been asking, his community has been asking for PPE equipment for over 2.5 months. So when I hear politicians saying they haven't known, they don't know, they haven't had the accurate information, where was it going to go? Why is it the rest of the world has known what's going on? Why is it that our frontline people have known what's going on? Why is it that these young people, as they've tried to talk to the press, they're being told by the administration that their hospital administration, they should not allow their physicians to talk to the press, at risk possibly of losing their medical licenses. What is this? What kind of power grab is this? Why are they trying to silence our own people?
John, I want to jump in here. State Senator Jacques, the shortage of PPE.
Yeah, I'm not sure if he was talking more about hospital administration or the state or the federal administration there, but I certainly agree. I mean, PPE is something that, whether it's because of supply chains or just the global situation that's going on and the demand from so many different corners of the world, I know there are different restrictions being put in place with PPE. That's actually something where I led a number of my colleagues in questioning the administration at a time where we have halted elective non-essential medical procedures in our hospitals, something that really goes to the bottom line of what allows hospitals to continue operating. We've continued to allow standalone abortion clinics to basically continue operating at full tilt with tremendous use of resources relative to PPE. So I think we certainly want to conserve PPE, understanding that it's very difficult to get it when many times it's coming from China. And obviously they have their own situation. There are many other parts of the world that are competing against each other for PPE. So this is something that certainly there is emergency planning at the state or the federal level. I don't know that it's necessarily something that, you could predict exactly what's been occurring.
State Senator, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Andre Jacques, a Republican state senator from DePere. We've been talking about the state's response to the coronavirus pandemic. Just ahead, we look at vulnerable populations. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is the State Capitol Report. You're listening to the Ideas Network.